What is up, you guys? Welcome to episode 13 of the Marriage Prep Podcast. We're so happy that you're here with us today. For this episode, we are actually interviewing an awesome couple, Nate and Angeline Bagley. So you might know them from the Mormon Marriages Podcast or the Growth Marriage Podcast. Honestly, they are just like a superstar couple. They're awesome. They know about all things marriages. They've got lots of experience in the field, especially Nate. He has a really unique background and he'll share more about that in the podcast, in the interview, but he's had some really cool experiences, really just studying couples, analyzing them, and the two of them are just a terrific couple. So.
Absolutely. No, these guys are rock stars. Like Nate even gave a TED talk about marriages. Like they're total rock stars. They have those two podcasts. Like Ali said, Nate is the host of the Growth Marriage Podcast, and they both host Mormon Marriages, which is another awesome podcast. So if you guys haven't heard those, check those out. We were introduced to them actually by Allie's mom when we were driving to St. George and we were telling her about our podcast idea. She mentioned these guys to us and we listened to them and just fell in love with their stuff. So yeah. Awesome, awesome content. Definitely check them out, guys. You won't be sorry. And you're going to love this interview because they just share their experiences, everything about their story. And they dive into like a lot of really great actionable tips talking about like how to have those deep discussions, like, you know, word for word, just like really step-by-step advice. Just love, 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 love this episode.
Definitely. Yeah. It was honestly hard to cut off because we just like wanted to keep talking and mainly wanted to keep hearing from them because they honestly have so many great experiences and stories to share. So I would definitely encourage you to definitely listen to their podcast. So
this was
as well.
Another episode where we were just taking notes while they were just teaching. Like a really great episode. And just a little more about these guys. Like I said, they have those two podcasts, but another great reach. They have websites on both those podcasts and we'll have links for those. So you guys can learn more about them. But another amazing resource that they are working on right now is a site called Are We Roommates? And roommates is spelled with two M's. I had to look that up. So just, you're not alone with that. Two roommate, ArareWeRoomates.com. That is awesome. Nate actually did like 30 interviews with like the best marriage experts that he knew, like in his network, talking about how to avoid like this syndrome where couples feel like they're roommates with each other and they just kind of got into this big rut. And so it's just, and it's all free. So definitely guys, check that out. Go to that right as soon as you can. And I actually didn't listen to this episode. Check that out because that's going to be an amazing resource for you.
Definitely. So we hope you enjoy. And without further ado, let's get started.
Welcome to the Marriage Prep Podcast. I'm Nathan Hooper.
And I'm Allie Hooper. In this podcast, we will give you all the resources that you need to go from dating or engaged to creating a lasting marriage that will bring you more happiness than you ever thought possible.
Here, we're going to interview experts and discuss important topics like how to know if your partner is right for you. We will provide you guys a list of questions and conversations that you need to be having to make sure you're both ready for marriage and on the same page.
We will even dive deep into topics like sexual intimacy, finances, how to have a fair fight, and a whole lot more to make sure you can step up to that altar with complete confidence.
So subscribe now and make sure you guys don't miss any episodes, and we'll see you in there. What's up, guys? Today we are so excited. We have an amazing couple here with us. We have Nate and Angeline Bagley. They are the hosts of a couple different podcasts. One, the Mormon Marriages Podcast, which is a great one if you haven't listened to it. And also the Growth Marriage Podcast, which is incredible that Nate runs. And so we are super excited to have you guys on. Welcome to our show here today.
Thanks for having us. We're excited to be here.
Yeah, absolutely. It'll be super fun. So we kind of wanted for this episode, we just wanted to get to know them a little bit better, ask them some questions about their journey and how they got to where they are today. We just wanted to get to know them a little bit better, hear their story and what has led them to get to where they are today with their awesome marriage. So
yeah, absolutely. So to kick it off, guys, we want to know, like, what was your story before you got married? How, you know, like, what was each of your backgrounds? How did you know that getting married is the right decision for both of you? Like, how did you know you found the right person? We want to hear from both of you guys.
Oh man, do you want the long story or the short story?
We want all the juicy
details. We've got
details.
All day.
How about in the middle somewhere?
Perfect.
Yes. So Nate and I met at a camp out for young adults. We met on the dance floor.
Oof.
That's cute.
There weren't very many people dancing. I don't know if they were insecure or something about dancing, but I had always been a really shy person, very introverted. And I had just gotten home from my mission. So I wasn't super outgoing. We'll just say that. But there's something about dance parties that really make me come out of my shell. And so Nate, we had met previously because we were in the same singles ward in our church group. but he just thought that I was the shy person. So there wasn't really any interest there. But on the dance floor, I come out of my shell and I kind of become this whole different person. And so he was dancing and I was dancing. And there was a moment when I turned to him and winked at him. I don't know what came over me, but I gave him a wink and he melted to the floor in dramatic fashion. And that's kind of how we started, I would say, our friendship, because
I didn't know it was a friendship at the time. I didn't find out that it was a friendship until after. So I took that as like, oh, she's flirting with me. Interesting. Maybe there's more to this girl than I expected. And then the next day, I kind of made it a point to kind of get a little bit closer to her and get to know her a little bit better. And the first thing she talked to me about was this other guy that she had a crush on. And she started crying and talking about how she always blows opportunities. Like she has an opportunity in front of her and then she doesn't take it. And then she regrets it later. And I was like, oh, I guess I'm in the friend zone. So I kind of talked her through it. And I was kind of the safe guy because I had already spent so much time studying relationships and stuff. And I'm 7 years older than she is. And so she probably looked at me more like an old man.
I thought he was more safe than anything else. Yeah, I was
little.
A little
did she know that would play into my hands.
It's all part of his plan.
I was a little intimidated by his background, and I think you should let him know a little bit about how you got started in the marriage industry.
Yeah, so years before Ange and I met, I was a professional failure at relationships. I knew I wanted to get married, but it seemed like it didn't matter who I dated. I dated some incredible women, and it didn't matter who I dated. The relationship would always end in a breakup. And I was like, there's got to be something wrong with me because it can't be all these other women that are flawed. There's something that I'm doing that's wrong. And so when I was in my mid-20s, I ended up quitting my job and traveling the country to interview a whole bunch of couples who were in love with each other. And my goal was to figure out what they did what they were doing right that I was not doing, or what I was doing wrong. And then maybe they could tell me like, hey, stop doing this thing if you want to have a relationship like ours. And that's how I started down this path. And through doing those interviews, I ended up starting to get introduced to researchers and authors and therapists and coaches and people who just knew marriage better than anybody else. I got a chance to interview Gary Chapman from The Five Love Languages. I got a chance to interview John and Julie Gottman on multiple occasions, who are like the godparents of relationship research. And seriously, I've just fallen down this rabbit hole of learning what makes marriages work and realizing that there's a lot of other people who have had similar questions to the ones I've had. And so I came into our relationship with that background, having already done all that stuff. Mm-hmm. And so I showed up, and Angela knew that if she dated me, I was pretty serious about whatever, like I was taking it seriously. I wasn't just dating to have fun. I was ready to get married. So she took her sweet time. Like we were friends for quite a while, and then we started going on dates, and then she ghosted me, and then I confronted her and I was like, hey, remember that first conversation we had when you said you sometimes have a really great thing right in front of you and then you don't take action on it and then you end up regretting it later? She's like, yeah. I'm like, I don't want to brag, but I think I'm a pretty good thing. And I think that you might regret it later if you don't take a chance. And she's like, you might be right. And then a few weeks later, she called me up and she's like, I know I've been kind of ghosting you, but I think I want to give this one more shot. And I was like, all right, let's do it.
As far as my background with dating, I had spent most of my dating experience letting the person that I was dating run the show, let them set the pace, let them make all the moves. And so a lot of the times I kind of let relationships go a little bit longer than I really wanted them to.
Or move faster than
I wanted them to. And at one point I even ended up engaged. And deep down, that wasn't what I wanted, but I had a really hard time making those decisions or having those uncomfortable conversations.
And being honest with yourself.
And being honest with myself. And so I ended up in a situation that I didn't want to be in with a really great guy, a really incredible guy, but I personally was just not ready. And so now meeting Nate, I felt like I was kind of a novice at dating. And here I am meeting this expert of dating. And it was really intimidating at first. And so I was really, really terrified. And because of that, put him in the friend zone immediately. But I think the blessing that that was is that we spent 7-8 months really getting to know each other as friends. And we had this really awesome foundation as friends. He was one of my best friends before we were ever romantically involved. And then he started taking me on dates, and I had the same fear come over me of getting in a situation that I didn't want to be in because I was so indecisive in dating. And it wasn't until he had that conversation with me where he was like, look, you told me that you let these experiences go by and you regret it later, and I just don't want you to regret this down the road. It wasn't until that conversation that I really decided, okay, what am I going to lose? I might as well give it a try. He's my best friend, so why wouldn't I want to be with my best friend? And at that point, he let me set the pace of the relationship, and no guy had ever let me do that before. And so I was the one that had to make all the first moves, and he really took the back seat and let me do all that. So in the end, I was making the choices in the relationship for me, to the point where when we decided to get married, it was the easiest decision because I had already been making so many micro choices up until that point that I had never done in relationships before. And that's so, so cool. I think one thing that made me ready to get married was those little micro decisions. It was terrifying to be like, well, now I have to be the one that holds his hand first because he's going to let me do all that. Now I have to be the one to say I love you first because he's going to let me do that. And it was the most terrifying thing.
Did you say
thing.
I love you first?
I did say I love you first. Aww. Remember we were cuddling on the couch and you said, you whispered like, tell me a secret. And I blurted out, I love you. And you were like, what? And I was like, that, I did not expect that to come out of my mouth. But
oh, that's so sweet.
In the end, it was my choice. And it's one of those things where now when all relationships have ups and downs, and all marriages have ups and downs, but I can always go back to the peace I had in making the decision to marry him, to know that, yeah, I was the one that made the choice. It was the right choice for me.
That's so cool. I love that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Thanks. I think there's like lots of power in, yeah, just taking your time. And it sounds like it wasn't rushed. But because of that, you have like a super solid foundation and that friendship. I think that's what everybody wants in their marriage. So that's really cool. Yeah, I love that.
Absolutely. I love that it was a process. Like, it wasn't like just like a one like light shining moment. It was like you said, Angela, it was like multiple little micro decisions that took you to this place where you knew that marriage was the right thing, where you just blurted out like, I love you. Like, it just all kind of culminated. And so it wasn't just like this one big thing, which I love and I think is so important, because these days, like, couples would just rush into marriage so quickly before they're really ready. But you guys had a super solid foundation, which I think is really powerful.
Yeah.
Right. And there's a way to get there. Like, sometimes relationships, they date for years before they get married, and sometimes they date for months before they get married. And I don't think it's necessarily the amount of time that happens before you get engaged or before you get married. I just think there are certain things that need to happen in that period of time before you get married. Whether it takes you 2 years to do that or whether it takes you 2 months to do that, as long as you hit those key points. And we can go over some of those things, but
yeah, I think absolutely.
It's more making sure you hit those key points than necessarily the amount of time that it takes to hit those key points.
Yeah. What would you guys say are those key points? Like, for you guys, what were those key points you feel like you had to hit before marriage was the next step for you?
I think having a basis of friendship was really important. Do you want to go into friendship first for a little bit?
Yeah, the way I like to talk about friendship is any friendship consists of... So whenever I talk to people about friendship, I talk about that there's three essential pillars of friendship. And if you think about anybody you're friends with, these three pillars are probably present, they're intact, and they're strong. And the pillars are, I know you, I like you, and I have your back. And if you have two of those three pillars or one of those three pillars, your friendship is really going to suffer. But if you have all three there and they're all strong, your relationship is going to flourish. So Angeline and I spent a lot of time getting to know each other a lot. We got to know each other beyond just like general interests, but like we got to know each other's history, our pasts. We got to know each other's friends and family members. We got to know our goals and dreams and fears and anxieties and that was a really important piece to developing our friendship. And that's something that we continue to work on today. Like, we're constantly asking each other open-ended questions, thought-provoking questions, questions. Like, I think even last night we went on a little date and we both learned something about the other person that we didn't know before. Mm-hmm. And we're married, and it's fun to treat your partner as if they're kind of like a treasure map and there's always unexplored areas that you can get to know if you get curious enough. And that helps to maintain a really strong friendship. The I know you pillar, the I like you pillar is all about gratitude and appreciation. And when you're looking for ways that your partner is improving your life and making it better, it does this thing where you kind of light up when they walk in the room and you get excited to see them and you look forward to spending time with them. When there's not gratitude and appreciation in your relationship, you start to become resentful and you start to become angry and you start to become stressed out and overwhelmed and kind of negative towards your partner. And you start to wonder, did I marry the wrong person? We don't enjoy spending time together as much. I don't feel the butterflies anymore. And so much of that comes from gratitude. And then the last one is that I have your back, and that's all about trust. It's all about keeping small promises. It's all about responding to little bids to connection that your partner makes and that you make to your partner. Like, you got to show up for each other. And if you don't have that trust, you're always going to be nervous that, will my partner have my back when I need them most? Will they be there for me when I'm scared or worried or in dire straits? And so if you can have those three things be strong, which I think we consciously and subconsciously really worked on developing those three things before we got married. And now they're very conscious things that we do on a regular basis. So that's definitely one place to start as far as like checking boxes before you tie the knot. You want to have those three pillars be strong.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's cool. And I would imagine I feel like it does continue throughout marriage. Those are great things to like checkpoints all the time. How are we doing?
Oh, absolutely.
Do we really know each other? Do we really do we trust each other? Do we have each other's back? And if not, what can we do to change that? I think that's really cool.
Well, and for an example, Nate and I are coming up on our 5th anniversary. And I just want you to think back of who you were 5 years ago and how much you've changed in 5 years. And
how old were you guys 5 years ago?
We were
19.
Yeah. Just like Nathan was on his mission. So I was in college.
Were you different 5 years ago than you are now?
Oh my gosh. Yes. Absolutely. So different. So different in so many ways. I hadn't even served really a mission. Easy. I was some punk kid. Yeah.
It's really easy when you get married to think like, okay, I know this person better than maybe even better than they know themselves. And then just like not make any effort. But 5 years down the road, they're like, Angeline is so different now than she was when we got married. And so am I. And there's a lot of people who will use that as an excuse to end their relationship. Like, oh, we grew apart. We just drifted apart over time. And maybe it just wasn't meant to be. But man, if your partner, if you're both changing and evolving over time and you're keeping tabs on each other, you're not drifting apart. You're growing together. Like you're changing and you're evolving, but you're doing it. You're both witnessing that change instead of like waking up 10 years down the road or 5 years down the road and being like, whoa, you changed? Whoa, how did that happen? Well, I guess this isn't going to work out anymore.
You shouldn't change. You should be the same person as the person I married.
You're not who I remember.
But people are upset if nothing changes, right? If it's just the same all the time. Like, exactly. I think it's exciting to have change. Yeah.
Right. And I love the song Grow As We Go by Ben Platt. And it's talking about those ups and downs. And it's saying, if it's change that's what you need, then you can change right next to me. And I love that we're growing together each year that goes by. We grow and we change and we evolve. And that's requires continually getting to know this new version of your spouse.
And I think more importantly, I mean, that's really important to mention, but it's also really important to mention that change oftentimes comes with a lot of anxiety and pain.
Oh, for sure.
It's not easy. And sometimes it's a lot of fun, but most of the time when you're evolving and changing and growing, it's uncomfortable, it's painful, it's filled with anxiety. And so I want couples to know, one of the messages that I wish more couples knew is that if you're feeling anxious and uncomfortable in your relationship, that's not a bad thing. More often than not, it means you're bumping into a new problem or a new opportunity that will allow you to kind of unlock a new level in your relationship. Most things that are associated with growth are uncomfortable. If you think about speaking in public or giving a presentation in school or applying for a new job, all of these, asking for a raise, asking somebody on a date for the first time, all of those things come with some amount of anxiety. And if you're unwilling to tolerate or experience anxiety in your relationship is really going to suffer.
Yeah. I can't remember who said it, but they said you can either have a deep, connected, intimate marriage, or you can be comfortable, but you can't have both. So you have to, you have to become comfortable with the uncomfortable.
Yeah. And I think that's like the interesting thing is that's going to be part of your life, whether you're married or not. And I think people associate that,
right,
like that hard, that the tough part of that anxiety with marriage, but it's really just part of life. And if you're married and you can like be there with each other and support each other through that tough change, then it's, you're just better off because of it. But I think it is just part of life.
Absolutely. Sure. Yeah.
So you guys just kind of established this foundation of like a really deep friendship, and you understood each other, you knew each other, and you were growing together. When you guys decided that marriage was the right thing for you, what were some things that you guys did to prepare to get married? Obviously, we know Nate was a wealth of marriage knowledge, but what were some things you guys did to prepare together to make sure your marriage was going to be strong and kind of endure the test of time?
We read a lot of books and listened to a lot of podcasts together and then talked about them. We have so many good recommendations. I think the one that was, I think, life-changing for me was a seminar called Celebrating Partnership by Alison Armstrong. And that is one that I recommend to all engaged couples. Alison Armstrong is the master of teaching the difference between men and women and why men do what they do, why women do what they do, and really setting you up for success and how to interact and how to deal and manage conflict in your marriage in a way that will resonate with your partner. Because ways that women deal with conflict are totally different than ways that men deal with conflict. And not even that, just the way we tick. And her, I think it was like a 10-hour seminar, right?
Yeah, it was like a weekend
seminar. It was a really long seminar, but we took a couple months actually to get our way through it. But it sparked a ton of amazing conversations between the two of us. That's that so was one cool thing we did.
Yeah, we'll have to check that out. That sounds awesome.
Yeah, what else? Tell us more.
I think it was just a huge part of it was being willing to have the really difficult conversations up front. Being really, like, we kind of have a rule that we established in our marriage early on that if you ever feel like you want to hide something from the other person, that's the very thing that's the moment and the very thing that you need to tell the other person. So if you overdrew on the bank account and you want to hide it, like that's the thing you need to go tell your partner. Or if you look at pornography, you need to go talk to your partner. If you're like scared, if you're ashamed to admit it, what were some of the other things that,
if you backed the car out of the garage and accidentally dinged the car, or just little things like that. If you broke a dish, or just things that,
we made that rule to talk about the things that kind of scare us the most.
If you have a crush on somebody and you don't want to tell your spouse,
talk to them.
Right.
Just things like that can lead to some really uncomfortable conversations.
And that you never think will happen. Even talking beforehand, like in our marriage, we're going to experience things that we're not prepared for, whether it's losing a parent suddenly or losing a child or getting sick or losing a job. Or
a natural disaster,
developing feelings for someone else. Like there's all sorts of things that happen to people all the time and they never, ever anticipated that it would happen to them. And it's like, okay, when this happens, not if, but when something like this happens, how are we going to respond? Mm-hmm. If we go through bankruptcy, these are scary things that people deal with. How are we going to choose to respond to that? And having conversations about maybe people that we've seen deal with these problems poorly and what we could do differently. Like those were really valuable conversations to have. Being honest with each other about our pasts and mm-hmm. the mistakes that we made and the things we were ashamed of, and like really letting the other person see and accept us, not just for, because when you're dating, it's really easy to put your best foot forward and it's really easy to kind of paint an ideal picture of who you are and hide mm-hmm. all of the ugly stuff, hide your shadow in an attempt to like be as likable as possible so you can win the affection of somebody. But when you get married, like, do you want to love the person for who you need them to be in order for you to be comfortable and happy? Or do you want to love the person for exactly who they are? And a lot of people have marriages where they're so uncomfortable with the potential weaknesses or flaws. So it's really easy to accept the ideal version of your partner, I guess is what I'm saying. It's easy to accept them when they're on their best behavior, when all you know about them is the very best. But the most beautiful thing about marriage is when you can tolerate the anxiety of really accepting and loving somebody for exactly who they are, including their weaknesses, their imperfections, their shortcomings, the mistakes that they've made. And that's a really powerful experience that I don't think many people get to have because they're so scared to share with each other their inner shadow, the things that they're scared of and ashamed of. So that's something that we tried to lay out on the line from the very start as well.
That's really cool. Yeah, I love that. I think you're spot on. Like, it's really hard and uncomfortable. And so a lot of people don't want to do it. But doing those, like sharing those parts of yourself will lead to more intimacy and vulnerability. And that's the very thing that brings you closer. But it is kind of against our human nature to share those things and to open up.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah.
It is. It's tough. I would assume it's usually very rewarding. I think that's something that
I mean, it can be. It can also be really a hot mess.
Right.
Like you can share something really scary that your partner just is like, oh, I didn't realize that. And that's a deal breaker. And I think that's another scary part about having those conversations is you sometimes have to put the relationship on the line. But if you don't do that, what you have to do is spend the rest of your life pretending to be somebody that you're not. And that's its own form of hell.
Yeah.
Like that's absolutely
living with somebody 24/7 where you feel like you have to hide parts of yourself from them because if they find out, they might leave you. Like that is, it's torturous. It's terrible.
Yeah.
And me and Nate have both broken off engagements. So we empathize with how hard of an experience that is. It's one of the hardest things I'd ever had to do up to that point in my life. And I think Nate would agree.
100%.
But the pain of ending an engagement is well worth making sure you're marrying the right person.
Yeah.
Right. It's better to end an engagement than 10 years down the road have to go through a divorce. So having those conversations before getting married are really important.
Totally. Oh, absolutely.
Even if that means ending the relationship.
Yeah. I was just going to say, that's definitely been a theme for our podcast and something we talk with Wendy and we've talked a lot about on our previous episodes is that having those like in-depth, deep and difficult conversations is like the best way to prepare because what's the alternative of not knowing, like not exposing yourself or not being vulnerable to a person is living in that hell like Nate described. Like that's way scarier and way worse than just being vulnerable in that moment, even if it doesn't get received as well as you might have hoped. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm, absolutely.
I want to ask you guys too. So as you're going through that process of kind of preparing to get married, what was the scariest thing for you? What were you most nervous about with your marriage or when it came to like marriage preparation? What was the biggest struggle for you?
My biggest fear has always been that I knew I was always committed to do the work. And that was the biggest thing the biggest quality I was looking for in somebody else is somebody who would choose me and somebody who would also choose to, I'm a firm believer that marriage, the purpose of marriage is not for you to be happy. The purpose of marriage is for you to grow. And happiness is a byproduct of growth. And you lose the ability to be happy in your marriage when you lose the ability to grow in your marriage. And so I was really afraid that I would marry somebody who would be like, yeah, totally. Like, let's do this. We're going to have a great marriage. And then we got married and then she would check out or she would get entitled and I would be trapped, the only person willing to do the work.
Yeah.
And that scared me a little bit.
I think for me, more than anything, what was scary was just the anticipation of the unknown. Marriage was something I had never experienced before. And so it was not knowing what would happen. But I don't know. I feel like once we decided to get married, it kind of went pretty smooth from there.
Yeah.
I think because we had both decided early on that we were willing and excited to put the work into things. So once we had made that decision, I don't really think I experienced much fear, more just nerves, which I think is totally normal.
Totally.
Nerves and anxiety over the unknown.
That's cool. And I think like everybody's fear is going to be a little bit different based on their experiences everyone's, like pain points with getting married. But I think it really does come down to if you're able and willing to have those tough conversations and just be open with each other about those fears, you can get through it together and you'll be stronger because of it. But I think, thanks for sharing those with us. Yeah.
And one thing I am curious about, and before we kind of switch gears, is both you guys you both kind of ended engagements. If anyone's out there listening, what would you say to someone who might be in that situation where they need to end a relationship that's been going on for a long time. They really care about that person, really love that person, but it's just not going to be the right fit. How would someone know that that's what they should do and then like go about the best way to do that? What's your guys' experience there?
Well, I know for me specifically, like I can only speak from my own experience. And there were a couple of things that like I really, really wanted that other relationship to work. In hindsight, I'm glad it didn't because I ended up with Angeline. But in the moment, I was really frustrated because I thought we had all the ingredients, and for some reason things just weren't working. And I think there were some things that she was doing and some things that I was doing that both that contributed to that. And just being willing to find the lesson in that. Like for me, one of the things that I learned is I was not good at managing my own anxiety. And my anxiety typically came from my partner's anxiety. When she got really anxious and worried, it would make me nervous. That anxiety became a little contagious. And so my way of dealing with my anxiety was to try and make her anxiety go away. So if her anxiety went away, my anxiety would go away. That's just, it doesn't work. Like I spent so much time and energy trying to change her and get her to feel better again that I wasn't doing a very good job taking care of myself. And that was a huge, and I was robbing her when I did help her with anxiety. I was robbing her of the ability to learn to soothe herself and to deal with her anxiety on her own. She, in a sense, was becoming reliant on me. And that's something that I learned in hindsight. And then the other thing that I learned that was more of a her thing was, and this is why I allowed Angeline to set the pace in our relationship. Like she said, I was very clear. I spent a lot of time trying to get my ex to choose me. I was like, I would do everything I could to convince her that like, yes, being with me is a good idea. You should do it. Like go all in. This is not a mistake. This isn't a bad choice. And after I got out of that relationship, I was like, I'm never doing that again. I don't ever want to beg somebody to love me. I don't want to convince them that I'm a good decision. I want to be the type of partner that when I'm dating somebody, they're like, oh my gosh, I'm dating Nate freaking Bagley. I can't believe this. I'm so lucky. And I want on our wedding day for her to like hold my hand and look in my eyes and just be like, I cannot believe that I get to marry you. I didn't want to be like, please show up, please show up, please show up. And so those were my two big lessons is one, I needed to take responsibility for my own emotions and stop trying to solve everybody else's problems and kind of let my partner learn to solve her problems on her own. And then on the flip side, I never wanted to be the guy who was trying to convince my partner to be with me or stay with me, even to this day. Like if Angeline, I want Angeline to know that she has every opportunity to not choose me. Like if she wakes up one morning and goes, I don't want to be married anymore. Like I'm not going to be like, please, please stay. I'm going to be like, all right, if you don't want to be with me, like that's a choice. And you have to live with the consequences. But I'm not, anyway, I don't think that'll happen, but I'm just not in the position where I have enough dignity now to know that like, I'm never going to beg somebody to be with me again.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that's powerful.
As far as my situation, again, everyone's situation is going to be so different and so unique based on their own individual circumstances. But for me, I feel like the relationship had everything that I had ever wanted on paper. Everything that I had decided I wanted in a husband, that I wanted in a relationship, like that was there. But for some reason, I just could not get on board. I almost the opposite situation as Nate. I had a really hard time being able to just say yes and just feel at peace with a yes. And ultimately, in hindsight, I think that I wasn't ready and I wasn't who I wanted to be going into a marriage. And I didn't think it was fair to the person that I was with to be all in, but to be in a relationship with someone that was so hesitant to be all in. I cared and loved about this person enough that I wanted them to be with someone who was all in for the relationship. And it took a long time for me to be able to finally let it go and come to that conclusion. But kind of like what Nate said, I think that he wanted somebody that would choose him. And ultimately, when it came to my relationship, I wanted to be in a relationship where I chose them. And I knew that that was what I wanted. So ultimately, ending it was the best decision.
Totally. I think it's interesting that you guys both had these really unique, different experiences, but it almost sounds like this, and that was, you both said that was one of the hardest things you ever dealt with. And I think anyone who's gone through a breakup can attest to how hard it is when you really love someone and you have to let them go. But it sounds like the very struggles and things that you went through are exactly what led you to each other. And so I would just say kind of to encourage anyone listening who's like super terrified because they are realizing maybe for whatever reason their paths aren't aligned with the person who they thought they might be going to marry. But I think everything ends up leading to everything will work out and you'll find that person. It just, I think you just have to trust yourself. And
yeah, nothing in life is wasted if you learn something from it. Yeah,
totally.
Love that.
Yeah. So that's so cool. Thanks for sharing that.
Yeah, I really appreciate you guys being willing to open up about some of those things. I know that's, you know, a topic you might not want to always dive into or think about. So I appreciate you guys. And I think that it's provided a lot of value for people. But I want to kind of shift gears a little bit here. And we talked about this a little bit earlier, but I listened to a podcast that Nate was on when he was being interviewed called Dreams and Drive. And he talked about kind of his business and his path. And he talked about Nate, how one of the biggest things you struggle with is getting people to understand, like, if their marriage is like mediocre, where they're just like, it's just comfortable, it's just good enough, and just kind of them being okay with that versus having the potential of them having an extraordinary marriage. So I want to talk about that and understanding, like, the biggest inhibitor to being great is being good. And that's something that comes from Jim Collins' book, Good to Great. And so for you guys, what would you guys, how, if someone has a mediocre marriage, how would you know your marriage is mediocre? And how can we expand our vision to see what's really out there and how an extraordinary marriage can really bless and impact their lives?
Great question. I would start by saying, you know, you can know your marriage is mediocre if you're excessively comfortable. Meaning, how do I put this? So if you're in the sweatpants phase of marriage, if like you have a really great routine, but that routine doesn't involve like making out with each other, having deep and intimate conversations with each other. If you're talking mostly about logistics or children, that could be a sign that you have a little bit of a mediocre marriage. If there's problems that you're having in your marriage, but you're kind of scared to bring it up with your partner, that could be a mediocre marriage. If you have the same arguments over and over and over again, and you just can't make any progress, that could be a sign of a mediocre marriage. If you hang out with your friends and gossip about your partner behind their back, or complain to your parents about your partner dropping the ball or being unreliable or the mistakes that they're making.
Or a third being an extra child.
Yeah, like if you're acting like an extra child that you just have to take care of. Those are signs that your marriage needs some work. And it's really common. Like the interesting thing is that most marriages trend towards getting worse over time. Like that's just the natural state of relationships, is they're in a natural state of degradation. They're constantly kind of breaking down. And if you truly want to have an extraordinary marriage, which I believe most people don't even realize what an extraordinary marriage looks like.
Yeah. Yeah.
Let alone know that it's possible, because so many of the people around us have settled for average love, like passable love.
Totally.
Something that's, well, we like each other enough and we get along enough that we don't want to disrupt the relationship to address the things that aren't working, because the things that are working are good enough. And so it's really easy to get lulled into that false sense of complacency or not even know that you could have something more. But I think the beauty of marriage is that you can make your marriage look like anything you want. You get to be the author of your marriage with your partner, and you can do some incredible things, and you can deal with conflict in ways that nobody else deals with conflict, and you can grow in ways that nobody else will grow, and you can make choices that nobody else would make. And like you, the goal at the end of the day is to have the type of relationship where you can look into each other's eyes and be like, man, I am so glad that I am married to you. We have something incredible that nobody else will ever understand. And I don't think many people really get that far. They just, it's like, you turn me on, I turn you on, you make me feel seen and understood and valued and vice versa. And I want to feel this way the rest of my life. So we get married, and then when problems pop up, it's like, hey, I don't feel the way I felt about you in the beginning. What the heck is going wrong? Did I marry the wrong person? And then it spirals from there. And it just is like, well, I either have to endure this person who doesn't make me feel amazing about myself anymore, or I have to get a divorce. So that's kind of what people are left with. And it's really sad to me that people don't really truly understand what's available to them if they were to invest a little bit differently in their relationship.
Yeah. Well, that's like really, really powerful. And I really think it comes down to this almost ignorance of like, people don't realize that's even possible. Maybe they haven't seen it.
Do you want some examples?
Yeah, please. Totally.
So during this trip that I did where I interviewed a whole bunch of couples, I got to hear some amazing stories that opened my eyes to what was possible in marriage. So I met one couple where they said that whenever they have an argument, they go into their bedroom and take off all their clothes and they argue naked.
And great idea.
And they're like, wow, it's really amazing how quickly we get over whatever it is we're upset about when we're just staring at each other naked. I have another friend who they used to collaborate on a playlist of slow songs. And every night after dinner, when their kids would go do their homework, he and his wife would slow dance in the kitchen after they finished the dishes. Mm. And I thought that was like this genuinely sweet gesture. Like they had a dance playlist that they listened to when they were doing the dishes that was all upbeat, and a slow dance playlist when they were done.
Aww.
I met one couple who their marriage became like a symbol for the entire community. He was a youth pastor and they would mentor young couples. And then together they opened up this place called the Hope Center for Children. And North Omaha is kind of the more rundown part of town where there's a lot more gangs and drugs and violence. And they wanted to provide a place for youth to come where they could get off the streets and get mentorship and have a place to play and make friends. And they didn't have to get sucked into these like terrible, destructive environments. And they did that together. That was like their mission together that they did. They wanted to help the people in their city. And that was like a huge, huge thing. And it made me realize hearing all these stories, like how many amazing things are possible in a marriage if the two people are willing to like expand their vision of what's possible. And it can be small things or big things.
Mm-hmm.
Little things like in our marriage, we try and share a passionate kiss every day. Like if my wife comes home from work, my goal is always to pin her against the wall and kiss her for at least 6 to 10 seconds and like really make her feel loved. Or just little things like that. Doing the golden retriever when we come home at the end of the day, which is just like be excited to see each other.
Mm.
What are some things you think we do?
I like to hide notes for you.
Yeah.
So you find, like I number them. I'll usually hide like 10 at a time. So if he finds a note and it says number 4 on it, then he knows.
There's more
notes. I need to find more notes. Just little tiny things. It doesn't have to be anything extraordinary. It's just.
But to elevate the quality of the relationship.
John Gottman says it's the small things done often that really take a mediocre marriage to an extraordinary marriage. Yeah. And it takes being intentional, but it's totally worth it.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think it's so interesting because when you're dating, those things that just come naturally. You're super excited about doing that.
Mm-hmm.
But once you get married, it's kind of like real life sometimes will get in the way, or you just forget, or things just change. And so people slowly stop doing that. And I really think that is the difference. I think the little things like living almost like you're dating every day, leaving notes, like that's something that you would probably do when you're dating, but not a lot of married people do those things if they're not really intentional about it. And so I think, living like you're dating or you're courting each other all the time, it really adds up to make this huge difference in your marriage and makes it a lot more sustainable.
I love that. And so if couples find themselves, like obviously most people who are listening, they're dating, engaged, maybe they're newlyweds, but maybe down the line they find themselves and they realize, okay, my marriage is mediocre. Like they start noticing some of those things you listed off, Nate, like, okay, my marriage is mediocre. How can they then expand their vision and see what's out there and it's like understand what impact that their marriage can have if it's an extraordinary one?
Honestly, I'm going to recommend something here that you can go do. So despite doing this professionally, this whole marriage thing and teaching people to have great marriages, the last year has been crazy for us. Like COVID was really hard. It's really hard to get out on date nights. And
I was pregnant.
Angela was pregnant the entire time and nauseous. And so the last year of our marriage was basically sweatpants phase. And
we became mediocre.
And I was like, wow, our marriage is not what it used to be. Like it lacked a little bit of vibrance. Lacked a bit of spontaneity and adventure. And I was like, I cannot let my marriage slip into this space because this is one of the things that scares me most. So I got to do something about this. So back in November, I went and interviewed 30 of my favorite marriage experts. And I asked them this question. If your marriage drifted into roommate syndrome, if it was feeling a little boring, the spark felt like it was fading, you were kind of in sweatpants mode, what would you do over the next 30 days to get yourself out of roommate syndrome and then never, and ensure that you never drifted back there? And I conducted 30 of these interviews and compiled them into this kind of online summit that you can find at areweroommates.com. And if you, and we covered so many different topics from parenting to sex to communication to date night ideas. There's a lot of amazing resources. So if you ever, if you are new in a relationship and you're like, we want to have all the tools before we need them, that's a great resource. And if you're in a relationship mm-hmm. and you're kind of already feeling a little bit of what I just described, like our marriage could be better, our relationship could be better, go listen to those interviews and see what some of the top experts in the world have to say about it. Yeah. So
I really couldn't think of a better answer to that question. That's awesome. And that's a great resource. So we'll definitely include that in our show notes for everyone to be able to see. But
cool. And it's free.
So like, cool.
You can just go sign up and then every Monday it starts. So if you want to just go watch all those videos, that's the best way to do it.
I mean, that's free, 30 free videos from like therapists, experts talking about how to avoid this plague that pretty much everyone goes to at least some point in their life. Even the best of the best are going to have these little moments. Yeah. So like getting that resource, that's invaluable, I think.
Yeah.
That's
and awesome. I appreciate you sharing that you guys were kind of in that like sweatpants phase. I think we all are, but it's tough to even admit it sometimes, but it helps to hear like everybody goes through that, even marriage experts, whatever. So
even
you guys, everybody does, but it's all about just sticking with it. And it sounds like you like,
And if you pretend it doesn't exist, then that doesn't help anything. So we just own it and said, hey, we got stuck a little and we're working our way out of it. And it's great.
Yeah.
It's part of the reason we went on a road trip.
Yeah.
You can hear our daughter screaming in the background.
Well, that even goes back to what you guys were talking about earlier about just like being completely honest with each other. Like if you have something that you're afraid to talk about your wife with, like being willing to talk about that and just being aware of how your relationship is and be willing to have those conversations, you know, it all like kind of circles back to that, which is awesome.
See, absolutely. Cause think about that. Just imagine going to your partner and being like, honey,
our marriage kind of sucks right now.
That doesn't sound like a very comfortable conversation.
Well,
but if you dedicate yourselves early on to be willing to have those hard conversations and to not take those conversations personally, they go a lot better. Cause it's easy to get defensive in that type of conversation. Like, honey, our relationship sucks. And it's like, well, what does that say about me?
I didn't do anything wrong. Yeah.
What are you talking about? I think our marriage is just fine.
Or I've been pregnant and I've been like, there's so many excuses that you could find.
Right.
So, sure. I mean, we've probably had more hard conversations in the last year of our marriage than any other year. And I think I feel closer to Angela now than I ever have
before.
Maybe
we should talk about how to have hard conversations.
Yeah.
Like just a quick.
Okay. Really quick. Go ahead.
Really quick setup. The first step is a soft startup. And a lot of this comes from Gottman, the Gottman Institute.
Yeah.
A soft startup. Their research shows that the majority of the time a conversation will end the way a conversation begins. So if your conversation begins in like a yelling fit, it's most likely not going to end well. But if you start it softly, the majority of the time it's going to end softly.
Or gently.
Or gently.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think one of the key ingredients that we don't talk about often enough is like everybody wants honesty in their marriage, but honesty is there's two sides to the honesty coin. One side is being honest or not hiding the truth from your partner about what's going on in your world. But the other part is being willing to receive honesty in a way that doesn't make your partner afraid to share with you in the future. And I think that's a piece that a lot of people miss in their relationship is they want honesty, but they also want the ability to have big emotional, negative, volatile responses to their partner's honesty. That's not how honesty works. Like if you're going to have honesty in your marriage, it requires two people, one person to be honest and the other person to be willing to receive the honesty with grace and poise. And you can feel emotions, but how you allow those emotions to come out, you're responsible for. And I think that's something we gloss over a lot. And that's a big part of that softened startup.
So a lot of times a gentle startup will look like, hey, I have something tough that I need to talk to you about.
Can you let me know when you have a minute?
When you have a minute? Asking permission to have the conversation is really important because then you don't catch people off guard.
Yeah.
And then if I were to go into Nate's office while he's in the middle of a conference call or something and just drop a bomb on him, it's not really going to end well. But if I can come up to him and say, hey, I have something I need to talk to you about, when would be a good time? It can prepare him to know, okay, I might hear something hard, or okay, let me wrap up what I've got going here so I can put my full attention on the conversation. That's a really good way to start. So step number one, soften startup or gentle startup. The next step that we try and do in our marriage is when we do bring up something that either the other person did that was hurtful to us or that we didn't enjoy, we try and say, I know you didn't mean this, but
the tone of voice you took
was hurtful to me. Or we always try and assume that the other person had a good reason for doing what they did and that they had good intentions, even if it didn't land well. So by saying, I know you didn't mean this, it takes away the defensiveness a little bit. So if I hear Nate say, I know you didn't mean this, but when you told me that my hair looked funny, it made me really sad. And instead of me being like, well, I didn't mean to, that's not what I meant. Oh, you're right. I can see why that made you sad.
Stop making fun of my hair.
So that's the second step, is kind of taking away the blame a little bit.
Yeah.
Not playing the blame game. And the third is, on the flip side of that, taking ownership of something. Even if you felt like they totally missed the mark, find something that they're saying to you that you can take ownership of. Do you want to explain that a little bit more, Nate?
Yeah, this is an antidote to defensiveness. And so if your partner says, I hated how you spoke to me at that party, like you were just so condescending, instead of just going, well, I didn't mean to, or that wasn't my intention, or explaining away all the reasons why their assessment is wrong, there's immense value in saying like, hey, I can see where you're coming from. I can see how you might have felt excluded, or maybe I was laughing a little bit at your expense. Like, oh, even if it's not 100% true, even if it's 5% true, take responsibility for the 5% so that your partner doesn't feel crazy. Sometimes I think when we get in an argument with our partner and they start denying everything, it makes us feel like we're nuts. Like, am I missing something? Am I not seeing reality clearly? But when you can take a little bit of ownership, you give your partner, you kind of validate their experience and their perspective and their emotions. And that's important. If one person in the world should get what you're experiencing, it should be your partner. And we should make a concerted effort to try and give them the experience of being gotten when they're feeling upset. And I think that's a great gift that we can give each other. So
That's pretty much it. Can you think of anything else?
That's good.
Besides apologizing? That's a good start.
Yeah. That's awesome. I love that. Yeah. Super simple, but I think a lot of people don't have those conversations because they just don't know where to start. And so those three simple things, that's a great thing that people can start with, start focusing on.
And can you guys just recap those? So it was, number one was the gentle startup. Number two was taking some responsibility was number three. And then what was the second one?
The second one was assuming good intentions.
I know you
assuming
didn't
your partner's
this,
not
but...
misbehaving, that they Perfect. Had a good reason for doing what they did.
Love and it. A lot of how you can do that is by saying, I know you didn't mean this.
Yeah.
But that's kind of a good way to start the sentence.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Totally.
Well, thank you guys so much. We're a little over 55 minutes now, so we want to definitely wrap up, but we want to get you guys' last 30 seconds, like 30 second just inputs. Like, what would you say? What advice would you give to those dating, engaged, newlywed couples out there? What do they need to hear? What would you guys say in 30 seconds or less? Each of you can go.
Check with your partner and figure out why they want to marry you. And if the idea of like working on them, using your marriage to become the best version of themselves isn't part of the conversation, like that should be something that you talk about. Because there is nothing in the world that will help you become the best version of yourself than marriage. But if you resist that, if you resist the growth, if you resist the discomfort that comes along with being married, you're going to miss out on basically all of the best parts of marriage. So just be really clear up front, like why you're getting married, and make sure that part of that why is so that I can confront you can confront the most uncomfortable parts of yourself, the insecurities and the anxieties and the shortcomings that you have, and learn to work on them to become a better human. And in doing so, you're going to make your partner better, you're going to make your relationship better, and you're going to have a much better life in every aspect.
Yeah, I love that.
And I would kind of piggyback on that and just say that we've talked about this before and we've talked about this a lot in the podcast, but the purpose of marriage isn't necessarily to make you happy. Like Nate said, the purpose of marriage is to grow as a human, and growing is uncomfortable, but a byproduct of growth is happiness. So when you approach marriage with the idea of I want to grow as a human being, then it gives purpose to conflict, and it gives purpose to the hard things that come. Instead of it being a problem that you shouldn't be having, it's a tool to make your marriage even better. So just framing your relationship as its purpose being for growth instead of for happiness.
That's so cool. That was a tough question for us to ask. Like, give us your best, you know, in 30 seconds. But I think you guys killed it.
We could
it.
Talk
I think
that for was, hours and hours and I know, hours I'm and like, hours about could, this, obviously.
Yeah. No, we feel the same way. And we really appreciate everything you guys shared with us today. Like, I was taking notes the whole time in our own podcast. And I was like, there's so much that I could learn from you guys. So we really appreciate it.
Yeah. Well, maybe I have to have you guys on another episode, because there's a lot of things I'd love to be able to unpack with you guys. But there's so much. We really appreciate you guys. That was seriously so awesome. Like I said, we're taking notes out here, just making sure we're getting all these little tidbits. Going to re-listen to this a lot of times. So
you guys are the next Gottmans for sure.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Oh, stop.
Yeah.
So, thank you guys so much. We appreciate you. And we'll see you guys in 2 weeks. But thank you to the More Marriage podcast, Nate and Angela and Bradley. These guys are awesome. So,
guys,
thank you.